Harry, we do one segment on the show that has a jingle.
That's true.
It's the Wolf Den Mailbag.
Don't be happy.
Don't be sad. You wrote the lyrics.
That's true.
Wolf Den Mailbag is a song where you sing, don't be happy, don't be sad. You want people to be neutral when they're hearing the Wolf Den Mailbag.
Exactly. I want them to go in without any expectations.
Emotionally neutral.
Yes.
Deadpan.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, and we don't have a song for this, but at this point, I want our listeners to be happy.
Oh, why?
Because we're going to talk to them about Pod Swag. Pod Swag, literally, and this is no bullshit, literally my absolute favorite, bar none, online store for podcast-related merchandise.
Wow.
And I can say that unequivocally.
Take that.
I would swear on a stack of Bibles.
Okay.
I would swear on my children.
Let's get them in here.
There's no get over here. Hi, Dad. That was not my kids. That part was a lie. But the part that Podswag's my favorite online podcast merch store is 100% true. You can get merch from all of your favorite podcasts, like WTF with Marc Maron, Comedy Bang Bang. It says, and of course, the Wolf Den, but we definitely don't have Wolf Den.
We got to get something.
That part of the ad copy is a lie.
You know what would be good is like a calendar.
With like a daily tip from you.
Yeah. Well, you could write like the podcast to come out that day so you remember. It's a good. I'll send it to Marissa.
But seriously, what I love about Podswag, and this is 100% legit, we don't print stuff on demand. A lot of the online stores where people go, where they partner within podcast world especially to say, hey, you know, you have to order between this date and this date so we can get enough orders to print up our t-shirts because they're printing them on demand. And that means that they can... you know exactly how many they need, but it also means they have to charge more. The quality is typically a little bit lower. The price point's a little bit higher. We have warehouses. We ship 7 days a week. We print all of our stuff because our head of merch, Marissa, who is a genius, figures out, hey, based on this podcast size and the audience enthusiasm, we need this many shirts or this many magnet sets or this many posters. And she prints them up. And so we've got them at a lower cost, but a higher quality. The shirts are so good. The magnet sets, everything we sell there is fantastic. My office here is decorated with Pod Swag posters. I got Marin. I got Bang Bang. I got beautiful stories from anonymous people, and I paid for all of them and then framed them myself. So she won that. So shirts, hoodies, posters, pins, mugs, stickers, and so much more. Plus, if you're shopping for a podcast-loving friend, you can grab a gift card just in time for the holidays. Pick one up and start shopping today at podswag.com/gift card. That's podswag.com/gift card. I would also like to let you know that the first 100 listeners who use the promo code WOLFDEN over at Podswag, they get 10% off. So WOLFDEN is the promo code. Podswag.com is the URL. Harry, you going to buy something?
I think I'm going to buy you a present for the holidays.
I love you. Welcome to The Wolf Den, the podcast about the business and people of podcasting. I'm your host and your friend, Lex Friedman. And today our guest is Martina Castro. Hi, Martina. How are you?
Hi, I'm awesome.
Well, we're going to learn a lot more about you very soon. But first, we have to start with shows we're jealous of, where we highlight shows we like so much we wish we had made them ourselves. Martina, do you have a show you're jealous of?
I do. It's called Caliphate, and it was made by the brilliant team over at the New York Times podcast unit. The moment I started listening to it, I was like, oh, man, I wish I had made this. It's so smart. It sounds like it doesn't sound like anything else I've ever heard. You know, just the just the editing. I mean, Rukmini is in, she's just a force to be heard, you know, like she is an incredible voice. But for me, the star was Andy, you know, in the editing, the production, the pacing. I mean, I'm sure there's a whole team behind, you know, that sound, that unique sound, but it was masterful. I mean, it just really captured me and I couldn't stop listening.
And that's what I like is that there's only so much you can do, whether you're thinking about audio or video, right? Like you've seen all the things that can go into making a TV show and you've heard all the things that can go into making a show, but it's how do you put those pieces together, right? It's just like songwriting or writing in general where we know all the words, but it's how do you put them together? And so the way that they're finding to tell stories and use audio, it's really impressive.
And the pieces that they left in versus leaving out, I thought was also really smart. You know, I mean, I listened as a producer and I was like, oh my gosh,
of course.
I can't believe he did that. And it's simple. It's not something that, you know, it's not rocket science, but, you know, just leaving in the sound of turning on the microphone. And I really felt like I was there.
Very cool.
So that's the one.
Caliphate. Well, we were talking before we started recording about how I've done, I think now 4,827 episodes of The Wolf Den, and I have to have a new show I'm jealous of every single time. I'm going to start paying Harry to come up with the shows he's jealous of that I can take on.
It's a sound investment.
But the way I have gotten through this is by breaking the rules. It's supposed to be a show that I have nothing to do with, but in this case, I'm going to once again go to the well of a show I do have a tiny, tiny bit to do with, which is Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, a new Earwolf show. I think there's two camps of Conan fans. People who are like, of course Conan should have a podcast. I know exactly what it'll be. And there's people who are like, well, what will Conan do in a podcast that's different from his TV show? And his new show is, it's so good. And it's, I don't think it is like his nighttime talk show because it's different and he has the same sensibilities and the same humor and the same human, but while still being hilarious, a little bit more introspective and certainly goes much, much deeper and more personal with the guests he's talking to. And I've heard a couple episodes so far. The two that are out as we're recording are Will Ferrell and Kristen Bell. He has more famous friends than I do. It's just, he is so funny and so quick, but just also so into it and passionate about what he's doing. And it's just, it's a joy to listen to. So I recommend it. I really like
it. Awesome. I just saw it come across the iTunes sort of banner ad. And I was like, oh, cool. I had no idea that even existed. So.
Just started, and he is really into it. He takes it really seriously, which I like. My favorite, I've talked about this before, but Chris Bannon, our chief content officer, has said that like the most important thing we look for with talent is, do they really care about making the podcast? Do they really want to do it? Is it a high priority for them? And he loves doing it. Yeah, I think he would maybe do it only and stop doing the TV show. Don't worry, Turner. I'm not saying he is doing that. I'm saying I think he could be convinced to do that. So we are here again with Martina Castro. You are the founder and CEO of Adonde Media, a bilingual podcast network, which most recently worked with Vice's podcast, El Chapo.
Yes.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Of course.
I would call it a production company, actually, instead of network, because we don't produce our own podcast yet. So right now we work with clients such as Vice, and also we've worked with TED conferences to make their TED in Espanol podcast. And our first client was Duolingo. And so we've worked with clients to make podcasts that really, you know, go beyond English language, so to speak. And we started off kind of, you know, I described it at first as a bilingual podcast production company, but really it's grown since then because, you know, most of my career I've done in English, to be frank. And
same.
So, you know, and so I was like, well, you know, language is an element of what I want to do. But I think as my sort of concept of what I want to be working on evolves, what I really want to do is break down barriers. Language is the biggest one.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but podcast is like one of the few mediums that hasn't quite tackled that. You know, books, movies, like we don't even think twice about having them be produced in other languages. You know, they are global products.
Yep.
But podcasts, just in one language mostly in this country. And so I found that to be really interesting.
And it's, you know, there are companies who I think are really, really good at it, not in podcasting, but like Netflix. Any original Netflix series is going to have subtitles in a lot of languages and audio overdubs in a lot of languages. And podcasting, you're right, is slower. But let's take a couple steps back to get the origin story first, because
sure.
You have a real tenure resume in audio. How did you start in audio?
Great question. As an intern, right out of college, like 3 days after I graduated, I started my NPR internship. It was a summer internship at a show that no longer exists. It's called Talk of the Nation. And
it the Talk of the Nation?
I guess so. I mean, it was the only talk show that NPR produced, so I think so.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, let's call it that.
Checks that box.
Yep. And it was I have a background in music, honestly. So audio for me was, I came in through that realm, not journalism. I ended up falling in love with journalism, but really I loved audio. And I had a family friend who worked at NPR and that got me in sort of like a volunteer job to do, to write a column for the Next Generation Radio program that NPR has to bring in kind of like the next, what it says, the next generation. and so that's how I kind of worked my way into NPR. And then I got this internship. And most interns, you know, at the end of the internship, it's like a hustle to like get a job, like anything,
right?
Like a week, you know, at any of the shows or any of the desks. So I ran around the building and I convinced the head of the national desk at the time to give me 3 months on the desk. And that's how I started producing. And someone told me, they said, if you produce, you're going to have a faster track to advance because everyone wants their voice on the radio.
Right.
So everyone wanted to be a reporter. And I was like, no, I'm happy just, you know, fiddling with the audio. I loved mixing and I loved recording. And at NPR, there's this luxury that you have a producer goes out with the reporter and to record anything, you know, an interview or something. And the producer gets to focus on the audio.
Right.
And the reporter focuses on the questions. And I loved being a producer. I found my place. And so that's what I did for Like 4 years, first on the desks, and then I moved to LA and I worked at a show on a show there, on a national show called Day to Day, also no longer exists.
You leave these shows.
I guess
shows
I have a bad, yeah.
No, I think it's when you go.
Oh, yes.
After they lose
right.
you, they're like, well.
Well, I guess we're done.
Yeah.
Yep,
Martina has left the show. It's over.
Should not exist.
Now, you mentioned it right at the outset that when you listen to shows, that you have your producer ear on,
yeah.
does that make it harder for you to enjoy stuff, or do you
Absolutely.
Think you enjoy it more?
Oh my gosh, so much harder. I mean, I can only imagine what directors and actors feel like when they watch our movies. You know, I can't disengage. I'm editing as I listen. Yes. I hear every breath, every poorly edited sentence, or so. But I think that it tunes. I mean, I just feel like I'm always learning. I feel like I'm a student of this craft all the time. And
yeah.
so I like to listen, to learn, to copy. I think the best flattery is to copy someone. And it's really been my school. I didn't go to journalism school. I didn't, you know, my school was NPR. Those years that I was literally working with a reporter or an amazing editor. I mean, really the best reporters in the country. I was so floored by the way they would craft a story on deadline in a matter of hours, and then sometimes over a matter of weeks. And I learned by observing. So I'm always got that on.
Right. You're all exactly. And I think that's how a lot of writers approach reading, where you can absolutely enjoy it, but you're also thinking about how did you structure this? Or did you need this sentence here? And I think, yeah, I mean, my biggest problem with consuming media right now, I always listen to the ad reads. I'm always curious about how they're doing those. And then when I watch movies and TV shows, I don't even try, but my brain is constantly finding continuity errors. And I then have to point them out to whoever's watching with me. I'm not looking for them. I'm not trying. And I just see them all, and then I'm super helpful.
Okay, we can't watch together anymore.
I've gotten slightly better at not pointing them out, but I'm still terrible at it. So you started in public radio.
Yeah.
And then you were in San Francisco.
Yeah. So I moved from NPR. I left NPR for my partner at the time. Honestly, it was a life decision. I was like, I needed to move to San Francisco, and I started freelancing, but very quickly got swooped up by KALW, which is a member station there. And I spent 6 years working there as a reporter, an editor, managing editor. I mean, that's really where I, you know, became my best self.
I love that. And over time, you recognized a need or a desire to produce Spanish language content.
Yeah.
What drove that?
Well, it was kind of mostly because I wanted to create something from scratch. So, you know, once I got to KLW, the news department was just in its infancy, and we had a daily show, which I felt really invested in, but I didn't create it. It wasn't created in my...
It wasn't yours.
It wasn't mine. And so I think by the time, I think it was around 2011, that my co-founders of Radio Ambulante, which at the time was just an idea, you know, they came to find, they found me at a conference and they said, you know, do you speak Spanish? I was like, yes, I do. And second was, so we've got this idea that we'd like to create a This American Life type show, you know, a narrative journalism show, but in Spanish. And I was like, yes. I was just ready to say yes to creating something from scratch. And I also felt like I had finally had the expertise to do something like that. So so that's really how it happened. I mean, I really kind of discovered my bilingualism. It wasn't something I was born with. It was a process. And so for it to find its way into my work was really kind of incredible. It was a real, you know, turning point. And I finally felt like I spoke enough Spanish, you know, and
right.
well enough to be able to do something like that. But it really got better after that, because we created the show. We launched a Kickstarter campaign at the time.
Very
we were
cool.
one of the very few, I think maybe the first, to raise so much money on that platform for a news or journalism project. It's like $46,000. And with that money, we got to working. But, you know, we really barely paid ourselves. And I was the senior producer and sound designer of the show for 5 years. And, you know, the team was scrappy. We really did a lot with a little. We had not a dollar of marketing budget, but when started growing and providing something that no one believed anyone wanted. They're like, oh, who cares? Nobody cares about narrative journalism in Spanish. And I'm like, we do.
Right.
And so let's just create it and see. And people started discovering us. And there really was a gap. I mean, there was just... I mean, to this day, I mean, I think that's what's so interesting about Spanish language podcasting, and why I think right now I'm dedicating my career to making more of them and tackling this barrier of language, is that there's still not that many.
Now, you mentioned, though, that you weren't sure at first if you had enough Spanish. Did you grow up speaking Spanish?
I had it. It was spoken in the house. So technically my first language was Spanish, like until I went to school. And I remember that my mom, I don't know if there's a story behind it, but I know that my mom, like the first few days after I got home from kindergarten, was like, oh, no. She's going to have trouble speaking in school. We have to push English.
Got it.
So they switched to English, and very quickly through like watching cartoons, I learned English. And then it became my primary language. Oh, yeah, with Mickey and Minnie Mouse.
Mm.
Yep. Just sitting in front of the TV.
I just resisted, for Harry's sake, I just resisted the urge to do my Mickey Mouse impression. But it was there in my head.
Oh, well, maybe.
All right, pal.
All right. You're welcome, Harry.
So it was in the house, and my mom would talk to me in Spanish, but I would answer in English. And then she had the reverse feeling. It's like, oh, no, I feel so guilty. They don't speak Spanish. But around 13 years old, I was like, really, I would always travel. My family's from Uruguay, and I would travel every year to visit my grandparents and my cousins there. And I felt so embarrassed at how little I could express myself. Like, I talked like a 5-year-old, and I was 10, you know. So I went for a month by myself. Like I was 14, it's a big trip to take at 14.
Solo. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what solidified my accent. I have a pretty good accent. You know, people usually can't tell that it's not my first language. And I started thinking in Spanish. So that was the beginning.
Wow.
And I just became enamored with the concept of connecting with my family's country and my roots through language.
Yes.
I mean, that's what it is. Language opens these doors that you just don't realize are closed.
Yes. I love that. And we were talking again before we started recording about I was a linguistics major and I had to study a whole lot of languages, a little bit of them, right? Mm-hmm. So I certainly am not fluent in Spanish. I am poorly fluent in Hebrew and in French, and that's about as far as I can go. But what I always found fascinating when you study language is that there are concepts that languages have that other languages don't, and those concepts basically don't exist in the other languages. And so folks just don't think about them.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of blows my mind.
Yeah, me too.
So NPR starts distributing Radio Ambulante in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also an award-winning show, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. We won really prestigious awards from the Fundación de Nuevo Periodismo de Gabriel García Márquez. It's the leading narrative journalism organization in Latin America, in Colombia. And we got a prize in innovation. It was the very first podcast to ever win a prize. So, wow. You know, we're definitely being recognized as a pioneer. But I think what I saw was because at the time when NPR started distributing Radio Ambulante, I was living in Uruguay. So I finally fulfilled my lifelong dream of living there by getting a Fulbright and getting a grant to teach audio journalism there, audio storytelling. And so I was living there, and I realized just how few programs were competing with us. Like, I was, like, by 5 years in, 6 years in, I felt like we needed more competition in the region. And I was like, okay, what's missing? You know, what is the puzzle piece? And obviously, it's money. It's always money. That's what's missing for us here still.
Yes.
But it was also, like, community. I don't know if this is just because I'm biased in favor of public radio, but yeah. I really think that the public radio network and community and spirit of collaboration is what made the podcast boom possible. I mean, really look at the top shows. This American Life, Radiolab, 99% Invisible. You know, they're all born at public radio stations. I don't think that that's a coincidence. And it's also just how, you know, ideas, the sharing of knowledge, like the fact that something like transom.org or PRX exists is very us. It's very public radio.
And, well, what do you think it is about that public radio environment that fosters that kind of creation?
I mean, it's going to sound cheesy, but
that's good.
Okay,
I like that.
We're going there. It's just that I was one of those people that had to go on the air three times a year to ask people to give their money. You know, I was like, call now, 510. Like, that was me, live, you know? And I just loved it. I thought I was so turned on when I was in front of the microphone and talking directly to the people who make my work possible.
Right.
And I think that that's what's so beautiful about podcasts also. The pact that you have with your listeners in public radio in the United States, it's not the same in any other country, is gold. I mean, this is what makes the whole thing work. It's the pact that we understand that you are making this possible. You're not just making it possible for yourself, but you're making it possible for everyone.
Right. Because including people who aren't even listening yet.
People who aren't even listening yet. It's like a public good that we are going to come together to support. Like that, to me, is how we collaborate without any exchange of money to make a podcast or exchange ideas or give away our knowledge, you know, on websites like Transom. And also infuses why, you know, the spirit of the solo podcaster connecting through this microphone, through this internet, you know, connection to so many people and asking them to support him or her. So it's that I felt like was missing in Latin America because, first of all, there's very few people doing it and they're all doing it like, I mean, if they're doing it, they're the one person in their city, in their town.
Right.
And so I was like, how can we connect over our shared language across national borders through this thing that should be able to connect us because it's the internet?
Yes.
And so before I launched Adonde Media, I launched Podcasteros, which is a community of Spanish language podcast producers. And the idea was, let's start connecting. Let's start cultivating this support network and the spirit of collaboration rather than competition. And so it's still going. I mean, we do really well. We have like an email newsletter that goes out every 2 weeks. But what's really exciting to me is the projects that we do together. I mean, we did the very first collaborative audience survey of people who listen to Spanish language podcasts. We just launched a directory, an online directory of producers, because I'm constantly getting emails from people at, like, you know, the big places like Gimlet and NPR, like saying, oh, we're looking for someone in Ecuador. Do you know of anyone? I'm like, yes, here's a list.
Here's the list, right.
So I'm, you know, whatever we can do. And that, to me, I feel like if I can lead by example, I mean, I'm not trying to, you know, I'd like to be humble about this. Like, this is just my perspective, but contribute my own little, you know.
You've got the wisdom. You've got
seed.
The expertise.
I hope so. I'm, you know, we're just throwing things and seeing what sticks, and hopefully it helps promote an industry.
And we're going to get to Adonde in a moment, but what this is really making me think of right now is just a week ago or so, I had a call with a rather large organization that wanted to know if we could help them with monetizing their podcasts. And they said, you know, we're diving in deep. We already make 9 shows, and this one is happening 5 days a week, and this one is twice a week. We do this one in Spanish, and we do this one a couple times a week. And I was like, this is all very exciting. Talk to me. And it was, again, very big provider, not known for making content. And I was like, tell me, how many people are listening? Give me a sense. And they said, well, the shows range anywhere between like about 8 and 50. And I said, we're talking 8 and 50,000 downloads an episode. And they said, no, the shows are ranging between 8 and 50 downloads an episode.
Human beings.
And I was like,
oh my God.
That's the people making the show, testing that it's working, some friends and family. But what I loved is that they still want to make those shows, even though I can't help monetize them, sorry. But like, they still want to make them because of that same connection you're talking about, right? It's the two sides of that relationship between the listener and the creator. And they feel good about it, even if only 8 people are listening, because they want to speak to those 8 people and those 8 people want to hear it. And I thought it was like really sweet, even if it was not a super productive call, but I appreciated it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is the thing. I am very big on making a business out of this for everybody.
Yes.
Like, I use the word industry, not just, you know, it's on purpose.
Right.
So when I talk to, you know, the producers that I'm now working with in Latin America, I'm like, no, you need to get paid. And so there is something that changes when you start treating your podcast as your job. I'm sure you know this.
Yes.
And so that's a thing that people in Latin America are not thinking about. Very few people are making money off their podcasts. Mm. It's their hobby. And I'm getting in there and being like, no. You've got talent. You've got skills that are worth money, cash money. You need to be charging. And so that's kind of my thing right now. That's my soapbox. And so I'm trying to promote the professionalization, if that's a word.
Yeah. Let's go with it.
Okay. Of this, of the industry in Latin America. And I'm just seeing opportunities to keep doing this, you know, I mean, this
and
is...
And it makes sense, right? Yeah. It's the same path that podcasting took here, stateside, where it started out where people were just doing them for the fun of it, and then for the audience of it, and then for the awareness, and then suddenly it was, oh, now I could also monetize this. You're just trying to hasten things along because we know what the path is.
Exactly. I mean, I've said this a million times, but, you know, I really do think I'm coming from the future. I was like, guys, you don't know this yet, but
now,
one day.
You don't know this. Martina already does because she's coming from the future. I'm about to do some fantastic ad reads. We'll be right back with Martina right after this break. Harry, we have a lot of things in common.
Is that true?
We both love you.
That's true.
We both work here at Stitcher/Midroll.
For now.
We both, what are you trying to tell me?
nothing. I've been not authorized to give
have
you
Have I been fired?
No.
We're both podcasting at this exact second.
That's true.
And we both wear corrective lenses.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'll be honest, I wear contacts a lot, but I always have to have a pair of glasses too. Because every once in a while your eyes get tired. And you're wearing glasses right now as we speak.
I've never used contacts and I never will.
I said that for a long time. I started with gas permeable hard lenses, which was a mistake. And then I moved to soft lenses. But I always have a pair of glasses. And do you know the only brand of glasses I own?
Is it Warby Parker?
Man, Harry, you are nailing these today. Warby Parker, you know these guys. You've heard of them on podcasts. But let me tell you a personal, true Warby Parker experience. First of all, their glasses start at $95, including the prescription lenses. That's cheaper than you get at the glasses store, I promise you. Lenses include anti-glare and anti-scratch coatings. And for every single pair you buy, a pair is distributed to someone in need. I love companies that do this sort of thing. You know that there's a whole lot of, I can't remember if it's called a B Corp or a C Corp, it's one of the, but I love it. I love it. That every time you buy glasses, you're also getting somebody else who needs glasses. But I did the home try-on. Right? You pick out which things you look interested in. And I have you can't tell this by looking at me, and you can skip the easy, obvious joke, Harry. Mm-hmm. I have a gigantic head.
No.
I have a big head. The length
it's
of temple I need.
It's normal sized.
I wear this is true. I wear an XXXXL size hat. Wear a 4XL hat. That's a fact. But with glasses, I like a long temple because otherwise they don't reach over my ears. They poke into my ear and I hate it. So I went to Warby and I searched on warbyparker.com. And I was like, only show me the shows that only show me the glasses that have extra long temples. And they did. And I picked out a bunch and they mailed them to the office and I tried them on the office. And the pair that I didn't tell anybody which one I liked the most, but the pair that I liked the most, I put it on and everybody's like, that's the one, except one person who I'm not going to name other than to say it was Kelsey, who was like, that is terrible. And everybody's like, no, get that one. And I got that one over Kelsey's wishes. And although Kelsey doesn't like those glasses on me, everybody else does.
Can I tell you a quick story, though, too?
Please do.
I did the home try-on, too. I also had them delivered to the office. And yes. Kelsey also was the one who said didn't like the ones that I
think we've identified the problem here.
Jeez.
It's not Warby Parker, because Warby Parker makes buying glasses online easy and risk-free. The home try-on program allows you to order up to 5 pairs of glasses. They get shipped directly to your door, where you can try them on in the comfort of your own home and get feedback from friends, family, colleagues, the mailman, anybody who isn't Kelsey. You can try the frames for 5 days before sending them back using a free prepaid return shipping label with no obligation to purchase. Like, seriously, there is zero risk here. It's 100% free on that side. It's so easy. An animal of my choosing, I'm going to go with an orangutan, could do it. So here's what you do. And I'm not kidding. I want you to do this right now. Head to warbyparker.com/wolfden to order your free home try-ons today. Choose the 5 frames you'd like to try and mail the frames back. Choose your favorite pairs to have your prescription added to and order. Warby Parker makes your experience completely risk-free and free shipping all around. warbyparker.com/wolfden to begin your free home try-on experience today. Do you have an iPhone 10 or an iPhone 10S or an iPhone 10R? I've heard so many ads where hosts ask if you have an iPhone X. That's not what it's called. But if you have an iPhone 10, download Warby Parker's app and you can use their Find Your Fit feature in the app using the iPhone X's True Depth camera to map and measure key facial features. Using those measurements, Find Your Fit recommends approximately 12 Warby Parker frames that are likely the best for your face. And I love your face. The process is seamless and takes only a few seconds. Harry, do you remember our URL?
It is it. No, I don't. Will you tell it to me?
warbyparker.com/wolfden. One
of
more
course,
time.
That's warbyparker.com/wolfden. Tell them Lex sent you. You should start saying that more.
Before we get into it, I just want to say for the record that you have convinced me not to do an impression during this ad read.
That is true.
Okay. But we are not the only show here at Earwolf. We're not even the only hilarious show here at Earwolf. Did you know that?
I actually knew that. I've been a fan of the network for a while now.
Have you ever seen the film Aladdin?
Yes.
Have you ever watched the movie The Aristocrats?
Yes, I did.
Who would you say is one of the best performers in The Aristocrats?
Probably Gilbert Gottfried.
Gilbert Gottfried. That is an amazing coincidence because Gilbert Gottfried is in Aladdin 2.
He played Iago.
Iago. And he hosts a show right here on Earwolf called Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast. He's also hilarious on this show. And he typically, he talks to current Hollywood and old Hollywood. He's had celebrities like Weird Al, Judd Apatow, Ira Glass on his show to talk about show business legends, horror movies, dirty jokes, which I would say is one of Gilbert's fortes, or forts if you prefer the original French pronunciation. He has a really special new episode this week with Alan Alda, who you know from MASH and I Loved on the West Wing. Of course, you know him from Alan Alda's own podcast called Clear and Vivid. You don't want to miss this one. It is a moving and interesting and funny conversation between Gilbert and Alan. And honestly, have you ever thought about Gilbert and Alan at the same time ever in your life before this moment? Probably not.
No.
So what I want you to do, if you want to hear his conversation with Roseanne Arquette or Patton Oswalt or Peter Fonda, anybody, is you're going to go find the show. You're going to search for Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast in Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you listen. I want to point out one thing. Gottfried is not necessarily spelled how you think. It's G-O-T-T, fried. That's how you're going to spell Gottfried. So make sure you think about that as you're searching for it. But it's a great show, and I recommend you start listening to it right this very second. We're back with Martina Castro, the founder and CEO of Adonde Media, a bilingual podcast production company built on the premise, I'm quoting you now, that to engage people through powerful storytelling or journalism, you have to speak their language.
Yes.
It's pretty good.
Thank you. Thanks.
And you have advisors whom I love. Jenna Weiss Berman from Pineapple Street Media is one of your advisors.
Yeah, she's been so generous. I mean, I think not only does she inspire so many people like me, but she's been a real resource in kind of demystifying the process. Mm. I often turn to her in times of, launching her company, it's hard, you know, it's lonely. And she just assures me that I'm okay and that everyone's figuring it out. And it's still kind of the Wild West out there. And I think that is always really comforting. She's also a business person.
Right.
And I really appreciate her perspective on how to turn this into a business. And, coming from the creative side of things and the journalism side of things, that was not my forte. That's not my background. But I was really lucky to launch the company as part of an incubator. And I think that plus the amazing advisors I have has really helped me feel confident moving
forward. Which incubator
was
it, by the way?
It's called Startup Chile, and it's an international incubator. It's pretty well known outside of the United States, because obviously here the ones in Silicon Valley take a lot of the space in the room. But
yes.
But they're outside. It's very well known because it's state-funded. And zero equity. So they just want to help. They just want to help. And honestly,
how cool is that?
The only thing you have to do is launch your company or be in Santiago, in Chile, for the duration of the incubator period. So my program was for female-led startups. I was with 26 other incredible, badass CEOs, let me tell you. From all over the world, from Bangladesh, from, Czechoslovakia. And so it was really formative because it was they gave me money, first of all. They believed enough in my idea to say, okay, we're going to give you $15,000 and now make it. Make a minimum viable product, you know.
I love that.
So.
And now, and forgive my not knowing this, how many people are at Adonde now in addition to you?
Well, I have an army of collaborators. They're all contractors.
Got it.
So not employees. But
it's very smart, actually.
We're still a little over a year.
Yep.
So I think this year has been a lot about proving that the market's there for what we want, for our vision of what we, I have some steady people who I think will become the first employees as I feel like we've got enough, clients in the pool. We've been in the phase of proving the market. And I think this next year is really about creating the foundation that's going to enable the growth that we want to see in the next
years. Of that involves, I imagine, helping to shift the podcast landscape, right? I'm imagining there are things in podcasting that you would like to see change, not just in Latin America, but in the U.S. too. And what is it that you want to change, and how do you help make that happen?
It's a great question. What do I want to change? It's actually, I'm not the only one, which makes me feel good. I'm a part of a cohort of producers and also just people in the industry who see the gap of what that we're not meeting. I mean, yes, we're in a boom. Yes, we're seeing incredible numbers and incredible growth and a lot of advertising money going into this. Like, this industry's growing. Yay. But it's not really growing that fast if you compare it to other mediums. And I was really appreciative of Tom Webster from Edison Research of calling that out at Podcast Movement and saying, hey, guys, you know, we're really only still at, what does he say, 48 million monthly listeners. And so what are we going to do about the next 52 million? How are we going to get to 100 million? And I think that that's key to what we're doing. We want to break with formats. We want to make stuff that we're not making yet. We want to be talking to people and making stuff for audiences that we're not meeting yet. And that means experimenting. And so I've targeted and reached out to clients and potential partners that are in for that. They want to see this grow. They want to go to the next 100 million and maybe 200 million, you know? And they don't see that pool as being this really finite little pool that we've been feeding the podcast that we've all been making already. They see it as a pool of people that don't even know what a podcast is yet. And so it's lofty. It's not necessarily like instantly a moneymaker. And so it's not that easy to sell. But I think companies that are global and that have a global perspective of who they're clients are, who they're trying to connect with, get it.
I love about this is I think that there are a lot of folks in the space who think that there's a barrier to entry on the technology side. How easy or not easy is it to subscribe to podcasts, find them, discover them, and keep listening? People, even just this past weekend, I was talking about what I do for a living with group at a Thanksgiving event, and they, oh, now I've dated it. Just this past weekend, I was talking to some friends who didn't know much about what I did, who, when I mentioned that you can subscribe to podcasts, they said, oh, so you have to pay for them. I said, no, it's not subscribe in that sense. I was like, oh, Apple's right, because Apple really hates that subscribe button. But a lot of people are trying to solve this on the technology side, and you're saying you can also find more audience with content that is focused on audiences that aren't already listening. And I like that direction.
Absolutely. And I'm not the only one. I mean, Tom said it best. I feel like I've been, you know, preaching Tom Webster's words for weeks now. I keep mentioning him and his manifesto. I really recommend anyone who's interested in this to go read it. But he says, you know, look at the top 10 TV shows. I mean, there's Real Housewives of New Jersey in there or whatever. Yep. We're not making that right now. At least we're not making it with the marketing budget that it deserves.
Yep.
To get it in front of people's faces. He also talks about how he mentions Netflix and their approach to shifting into this world where you don't talk about, you know, the DVD that you send in. You know, when they went from mailing DVDs to an online only platform, they didn't teach people how to use it. They just made, you know, shows that you couldn't help but want to watch, like House of Cards or, you know, Orange is the New Black. And so we need that. We need that approach of not podcast, like, here's the next new podcast, the next show.
Right.
What's the show? What's the story that we're getting?
You cannot miss listening to. Yeah,
exactly.
I love that. So you've made a variety of shows. Let's talk about some of your projects from Adonde. Duolingo. Mm-hmm. What is Duolingo? You mentioned at the start.
Yeah, Duolingo is it's an online learning platform. And it's also an app to teach people languages. I mean, in its very basic form. But their approach is really innovative. They teach you through games. And so you you get points, and you go up in different levels. And it's used by 300 million people, which is amazing. And it's created by a man named Luis Von Ahn, who I admire greatly. He's the MacArthur Genius Award recipient, created CAPTCHA. You know, is a person who's really forward-thinking in how to—
Is he a robot?
No, but maybe. I can't confirm nor deny. But he's from Guatemala, and it is the story of how Duolingo came to be is that he wanted to make education, and especially language education, free, because it's such a barrier to advancing in life for so many people. The internet is mostly in English, if you really think about it. So So I was really excited when they came to me. I just started at Startup Chile. Like, Adonde Media was 3 days old. And they're like, we'd like to make a bilingual podcast.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, well, it just so happens. I'm your person. I just launched a company. Let's do this. And they wanted to make something for the intermediate level learners of Spanish who were native English speakers who were kind of falling off the game because they just didn't have anything to engage them beyond the levels that were already there. And so we created this bilingual podcast. It's called the Duolingo Spanish Podcast. And we basically, via first person stories, we simplify the Spanish to be at an intermediate level and slow it down and alternate it with English. I think this was like really the key in our formulating this podcast that I would have never thought of on my own. I really think Duolingo put a lot of effort into this, and we hit a really interesting format that I don't think exists, where every 20 to 30 seconds, it alternates between Spanish and English. So if you get lost in the Spanish, you can pick it right up again in the English. Yeah. So it's done really well. We hit number one on Apple Podcasts, which I know everyone says now means nothing. But at the moment, it really meant a lot to me.
You did it without paying an outside company.
I did not pay anybody.
Harry, how come you haven't ever bought me to the top of the charts for the whole time? It's great. Well, I'm familiar with the show. I'm aware of it. My Spanish isn't good enough for it. But it's what I like is that tagline that says that it's they're not language lessons. They're life lessons through language.
Yes.
I like that. It's pretty good.
Thanks.
And you mentioned at the top TED on Espanol.
Yeah. So TED, as you can imagine, if anyone has ever not come across TED, these are the talks that are have become famous through the TED conferences that have been mostly in English. But, you know, the franchise and the TED name is absolutely global. There's no doubt about it. Actually, my cousins in Uruguay practice their English watching TED Talks.
That's
and they're translated in most languages with subtitles. And obviously, you know, the first few podcasts from the TED brand were in English. And their first decision to make one in a foreign language was to make it in Spanish. And so I work closely with Jerry Garbulski, who's the curator of TED en Español online, and also of one of the biggest TEDx conferences in the world, which is the one in Rio de la Plata, which is in Argentina.
Oh, wow.
And he's the host. And it's pretty simple in format, but, you know, a big step for TED. Huge, you know. And so I never want to minimize the very brave and bold step forward of trying to offer something in a different language. It also has required a lot of strategic thinking. How do we get this podcast in front of the people who want to listen to it?
Yes.
Not easy. You know,
Apple. Who may not be as familiar with the TED brand yet.
Exactly. Or they are, but they don't know about podcasts.
Right.
You know, Apple is not as big in Latin America, as you can imagine. Android is much more popular. So just to get people, I mean, it sounds so silly, but people have this icon on their phone and they have no idea what it means.
Right.
And they delete it. And so getting people to actually listen to a podcast, I mean, we're facing the same problems in the United States.
Sure.
But just at a different scale.
Yes. So you have a big project with Vice.
Yes. Vice News decided that for their very first podcast, they were going to do a documentary series, basically, on El Chapo.
Yes.
And obviously, you know, we're in New York right now. This is a huge story here, but it's a huge story around the world. I mean, El Chapo Guzman is notorious on a global scale. So I was impressed with them wanting to make this in both English and Spanish. So they approached us to make the Spanish version, and it is an adaptation. And I also was really keen on making sure they were, I mean, on both sides, we both wanted to make sure this wasn't just a carbon copy. This wasn't going to be just a straight up translation with voiceover.
Right. I remember that Ryan McCarthy, the editor-in-chief of Vice News, said that the two versions diverge in really interesting ways. And I don't even know what that means exactly.
Okay. Well, let me tell you.
Please.
It's the English version is narrated by the Vice News reporter, Keegan Hamilton. And he and Kate Osborne, his producer, reported this story along with a bunch of other staff members in partnership with Miguel Ángel Vega, who is the fixer in Mexico. Miguel Ángel appears as a co-host in the English version, but, you know, the scripting, it's all from the perspective of Keegan and his team.
Got it.
Whereas what we did is that we went in, and I have to credit Kate Osborne with this idea. She was brilliantly thought of this, that in order to not only get a fresher feeling, but also to weave in Miguel Ángel's perspective, to interview him about it. So I did not have him read a single script. We did some scripting afterwards, like after the fact, but the real bulk of it is us using the English scripts as sort of an outline. And I was like, okay, so tell me what happened here. So what happened when you guys went to the aqueduct where El Chapo escaped, you know, this time? And he said, okay, blah, blah, blah. And he, you know, he grew up in the town where, right outside of where El Chapo grew up. I mean, there are stories he can tell that Keegan could never tell.
Sure.
You know, sorry, Keegan, but it's true. It's true. And so to weave that perspective in, to get him to say, I mean, it's a very personal podcast in that regard because he shares his opinions, he shares his doubts, and it's just a different perspective.
And so, you can imagine if you're a bilingual listener and you enjoy the story that you might listen to both versions.
That's what I was going to say. I think it merits listening in both languages if
that's
you
so cool.
understand both.
Yes. I'm mostly just feeling guilty that I don't speak good enough Spanish. And now, I believe El Chapo, right now, you can hear all 8 episodes exclusively on Spotify for the Spanish language version, yeah?
Yeah. We're I don't know about the timing here, but we haven't launched all 8 yet.
Right.
Okay.
Correct.
So
still true when this episode comes out.
Okay, great. So, yeah. So all.
But some episodes are available now.
Some episodes are available now. Not all 8 have aired yet, but... But yeah, they're exclusively on Spotify.
Do you have any other exciting projects coming up that you want to talk about or nothing that you can talk about yet?
The TED en Español, we're going to continue working to make the next season. And there's a couple of other pitches out there that I'm really excited to get going. I mean, really, this next year is about pushing into other formats. I really have loved working in Spanish language. I hope that we can continue with that and maybe, you know, re-up on new projects with Vice News. It's been so great to work with them.
Yeah.
But I'm also thinking about other barriers that we can kind of start tackling, you know, that are keeping us from new audiences. So maybe new formats and new, you know, different content ideas.
I love it.
Yeah.
Now, one question more philosophically I wanted to ask you about is, you know, you just described with El Chapo how the Spanish language version is not a translation. It is a reinterpretation of the show. Anna Faris is Unqualified, is doing currently some Spanish language kind of note-for-note remakes in Spanish. What are the pros and cons of translation versus a remake? And, like, is there an ideal that we should be aiming for remakes versus strict translations, or do both have their place? Because when we look at some of our improv comedy shows on the Earwolf Network, it doesn't make sense to try to translate Comedy Bang Bang into Spanish. You need way too many actors, and a lot of the jokes are language-based, and it would be months of work per episode.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I would say, actually, that the El Chapo podcast is a mix of all of these things, because, you know, one of our episodes has a straight-up voice actor, because it's based on... It's very centered on the DEA agent who caught El Chapo, and he doesn't speak Spanish. So we straight up translated and had a voice actor do it. So it's a mix of things. And I think I actually think there's value in everything. Right now we're playing. This is experiment time. So let's see what works. One of the talks that I've given, I mentioned Radiolab's attempt at translating an episode and hiring voice actors. And it just didn't work. I mean, it just didn't work. And
why didn't it work?
Well, because they were trying to capture two very distinct personalities. But, you know, that being said, I actually almost feel guilty saying that, because it didn't work for me.
Right.
You know, I know Jad Abumrad, you know, his voice. I know Robert Krulwich's voice. I know their interaction originally. Maybe... There are people who have never heard them who could hear these voice actors and fall in love with those voice actors.
Right.
But I would have recommended just hire people who have amazing chemistry and have them recreate the show with their own chemistry, their own brand of chemistry.
Yes.
Because that chemistry is key to the identity of the show. You know, so I think it depends on the show, honestly. But in some cases, one of the coolest experiences I've had in terms of language and content and stories is going to the movies in Latin America. go to the movies. Most of them are Hollywood movies.
Right.
Let's be real. Like 5 or 6. There'll be 3 that are foreign, you know, like just like Chinese,
right.
India, you know, and then a couple that are like produced maybe in Spain or locally, depending on the country you're in. So very few are actually made for the people who are going to see these movies. And they go in and you sit down, and I've watched American movies sitting there and like see the subtitles, and they are completely, they're trash. I mean, they just do not convey any of the jokes. I'm the only person laughing at the jokes. I'm like, oh, okay. I guess it just doesn't translate. But they still love them.
Yeah.
You know, people are crazy for Meryl Streep in Latin America. They just love her.
And here.
And they probably don't even know what her voice sounds like, you know? So
yeah.
The fact is that it's worth trying. It's worth trying because even in an imperfect, dubbed over version of a movie, you can still fall in love with the story and with the actors. And so I think just do it and let's try and see what happens.
I love that. And actually, some of what you're describing reminds me of I have a lot of family who live in Israel, and if you get Dr. Seuss books in Israel, they don't translate them word for word because they wouldn't rhyme, and the whole goal is that they should rhyme. So like Green Eggs and Ham becomes Lo Ohev Velo Raev. I don't like it, and I'm not hungry. And that makes sense, and it's not a faithful recreation word for word, but it's a faithful recreation in spirit and feel, and I like that angle. I think it makes sense. So a lot of podcasters and aspiring podcasters and producers listen to The Wolf Den. And I love when our guests can share some advice with up-and-coming folks in the space. And you have a very unique perspective on all this. So what advice do you have for podcasters who are looking to start or grow their podcasting empires?
Ooh, that's a great question. Advice. I think it's so important to make something that you love. I think, you know, as we were talking earlier about the sort of secret sauce of the podcast industry here, which is that connection,
yeah.
That very genuine connection, that is going to be your power when you're down and tired and don't want to do the next episode. You're going to feed off of that connection. It's going to be what emboldens you to pitch it to companies that you're afraid to talk to because they're big and you're trying to convince them to sponsor you. It's going to be what keeps you going when maybe people aren't listening as much. It's a lot of hurdles and you gotta be doing and talking about something that you love and really connecting with people through that. So that's just number one.
I love it. And there's one other person who has a question, and it's not me. It is rather today's submitter to the Wolf Den Mailbag. It's the segment where we take questions from our listeners, and it's the only segment of the show that has its very own theme song.
Wolf Den Mailbag, don't be happy, don't be sad. Now just sit back and enjoy this week's Wolf Den Mailbag.
This week's question comes from Martha Jones, who asks, my family and I will be taking a long car trip for the holidays to visit my mother. What are some good podcasts I can play on the trip that are family friendly but won't drive the adults insane? Thank you. That's a very good question.
Great question. Family friendly.
What the Fuck with Marc Maron is great for kids. No, so I would say I'll throw out Brains On, which is from APM. I happen to love that show. My kids really like it. It's a science or history question that they explore each week, and they're usually kids submitted. They usually have kid co-hosts jump in who are not radio talent of any kind. They're just, you know, kids who they have show up, and it's kind of like Pixar in the sense that there are things that kids are taking away from it that aren't necessarily all the same things the adults are taking away from it. I certainly don't mind listening to it. I enjoy it. There's Earwolf's own Dr. Game Show, which is a comedy show hosted by Joe Firestone, where they talk. Kids are some of the contestants on the game show, and it is very worth listening to. They record that sometimes right in this room, I think. Do you have any suggestions on this one?
Well, the only one I can think of is Song Exploder,
because
I just love it. And there's a lot of music in the background, and I would bet that it's mostly kid-friendly. So
Hrishi actually takes very seriously not having profanity on his podcast. He at least bleeps it. So
there
if that's
go.
A factor,
there
you can get rid of it there. Those are good. So that's where you should listen to, Martha. So tell me this, Martina. Before we go, where should our listeners follow you online?
Well, they can follow Adonde Media at Adonde Media on Twitter, and myself and Martina Castro. And our website is adondemedia.com.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time. Thanks also to Harry Nelson and Jared O'Connell. The Wolf Den mailbag theme is by Casey Holford. You can subscribe to The Wolf Den at Earwolf, Stitcher, or Apple Podcasts, and rate us in whatever your favorite app is. Thank you, dear listener, and thank you so much, Martina, for being here. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure.
Want to hear Earwolf pilots before anybody else? We made a podcast feed just for you. Earwolf Presents is full of great stuff, like preview episodes for upcoming shows, peeks behind the paywall, and pilots for podcasts that haven't even been made yet. It's like getting to listen in behind the scenes here at Earwolf. Starting January 21st, Earwolf Presents will have a bunch of new pilots for you, like Edgar Montplaisir's The Wokest. Catch conversations between the wokest man in the world and comedians like Risa Lechea. Also, hear upcoming pilots The Florida Cast, Wow, You're Native American Too?, This Week in Sports, and Carl Alarm all throughout the month. Let us know what you think of them with hashtag Earwolf Presents. Subscribe to Earwolf Presents to hear more great episodes from around the network and behind the paywall, like an episode of Drew Tarver's Strictly Business with Derek Contrera, or Act One of Matt Besser's punk musical, Stolen Idea. Just search for Earwolf Presents in your podcast app and subscribe so you don't miss an update.